Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo and David Stauffer.
All right, welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Special edition here. This is actually the first episode of the podcast where the two people on are actually sitting in the same room, one mic. And today I have with me Jerome McDonald from Oceanside, California. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not going to let you do that with my first name, though.
Oh, is it not? Oh,
what? Yeah. Yeah, it's Jerome.
Oh, it's Jerome. Oh, okay.
I usually let it slide, but since this, you know,
on the air. J-A-R-O-M? Mm-hmm. Okay, wow. I thought it was Jerome. Okay. So just to give everyone just a little background here, Jerome is a coworker of mine, similarly a big Star Wars fan. With these Star Wars movies that we're going to be kind of going in depth on, I wanted to get a different person for every single episode. And so I've been approaching different people, asking people if they'd join the pod and if they could pick an episode, which one would they pick? But the problem with that approach is I was nervous that no one would want to do Attack of the Clones. and Jerem comes in to save the day. Jerem tells me that his 10-year, when it was 10th birthday party?
I found out it was 9th. It was actually 9th.
Yeah. Birthday party was to see Attack of the Clones. So you at least have some positive memory associated with the film.
Yeah.
So it's great that I can get someone that would pick that movie. Because, you know, as you know, nobody likes this movie.
It was sad to come to terms with that.
Yeah, well, I shouldn't say nobody likes this movie, because we're actually also joined with us from Dallas, Texas, my regular co-host, Skylar. Skylar, how you doing, man?
Doing good.
Awesome. So, Skylar's just going to join us. I know you have to run real quick, but you're going to join real quick at the beginning of this episode, since we were doing Attack of the Clones, and I know you have, like, a strong opinion of it, so we're just going to discuss that, I guess, for a few minutes and then let you go. You mentioned to me that Attack of the Clones is actually your very favorite of the Star Wars films. That's including the original trilogy. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, of course.
Wow. That's... Scott, that's not a popular opinion. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, that's fine. I'm just going to be honest. My number one problem with the film is Hayden Christensen as Anakin. I think Jesse Eisenberg... he should have been cast.
David, you make a really good point there.
Yeah, no, thanks, man. Definitely. Well, I guess lastly, Skylar, am I right to say that Attack of the Clones is like a masterpiece film?
You know what? When you're right, you're right. And you're right, David.
Wow. Well, honestly, thanks for taking the time, Skylar, to join us. Jeremy and I are going to keep going. I'll let you run. I know you're in a hurry. So thanks for stopping by. See you, man.
Bye.
All right. Skylar Teo, making an appearance.
Unexpected.
Yeah, I know. I was surprised he wanted to. What's funny is we just talked about Phantom Menace, and he didn't seem to be pretty positive on Attack of the Clones, but no. I guess he had a change of heart.
It can do that to you.
Wow. George Lucas, the power of George Lucas storytelling.
Lucas right there.
Oh, man. So anyway, thanks. But seriously, thanks for jumping on the pod to talk Attack of the Clones.
Happy to be here.
What we're doing with these movies, of course, proper movie prep. We watch the movie. We take notes. This was, for me, legitimately difficult to sit through. like this was really hard. There were several moments that I was thinking, I've already seen this before. Like, I don't need to do this to me. I don't need to put myself through this. But, like, obviously, a lot of it's not fresh. I'm going to come out and say just hot take. Not a hot take, actually. Probably a very popular take or a very common take is that Attack of the Clones is by far the worst of the Star Wars films. It's not even close. It is the worst.
Well, hold on. I think you could say that Attack of the Clones is a great film if you're a 10-year-old boy.
Okay, right. If I'm 9 turning 10, or 8 turning 9.
Right, 8 turning 9, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
If I'm 8 turning 9 and my party is around, I think that's enough barriers for me to put walls up. Walls of denial.
Yeah, enough denial.
See, 9 years old, though. I mentioned this on the Phantom Pod. Or actually, I don't even know if I did. But 9 years old, for you to love that film makes sense, because if anything we know about these prequels is that kids love them.
Yeah.
Kids love them.
They're perfect for kids.
Yeah. They don't care about convoluted plots.
Nope.
They don't care about poor CGI, really, really bad scripts. Like, that stuff does not matter to them. And kids generally like the movie. So it doesn't surprise me that that you would have a positive experience associated with the film.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's everything about them seems catered towards kids. I mean, even the romance kind of makes you want to gag a little bit, which is exactly what a kid's reaction would be exactly that. So,
oh my gosh, if any movie would try to convince a kid to never fall in love,
mission accomplished.
Seriously, so this is it boils down to this for me, since you had a positive association because it was a birthday party. For me, it was a negative association because. When The Phantom Menace came out, it took a lot of the world a couple years to actually exit the phase of denial and come to grips with The Phantom Menace not being a good movie.
Right.
With all this built up fan anticipation, people were so excited to see it. It came out, and there were a few things that you can enjoy about it, the Duel of the Fates and stuff like that. I think people were holding on to those few things and convincing themselves that
just
it was
treasuring
great.
Them.
Right? Because at this point, George Lucas hadn't broken our hearts yet. Like, he hadn't done anything. He did not done anything that would lead us to believe, other than changing Greedo and Han, having Greedo shoot first instead of Han.
Right.
Now, that may have been a red flag.
He just deeply offended us.
It was a sign of things to come, but we just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Because, we just didn't think he was capable of completely ruining his own creation. And so, anyway, it took a long time for people to actually have to step back and think, oh, wait a second. I'm a big Star Wars fan, but this isn't a good movie, right? I had that moment in Attack of the Clones. Going into Attack of the Clones, I was still trying to convince myself and really telling myself that Phantom Menace was at the very least passable, but I enjoyed it. It was a part of the Star Wars canon. It had its problems, but it was still a good movie. Like, that was my view. So I had a moment in the middle of Attack of the Clones where I thought to myself, I can't keep doing this. This is so bad. It's so bad.
And how old were you when you saw it?
When did it... Okay, Attack of the Clones came out. Was it...
2002.
Okay, so it was 3 years after. So 2002, I would be... Gosh, what? In the seventh grade? No. 2002. What am I thinking? My math is terrible.
13 years ago?
No. I would have been a sophomore in high school, so 15, 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 15.
So I think you were about the age, maybe a little older than when I saw Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, okay.
Attack of the Clones.
So I was, for me, in terms of my interest in film and movie, film criticism, I would say that I was starting to develop at least a taste. It wasn't before I could watch anything, I would probably like most things. But now I just started really developing that sensibility. And so Attack of the Clones hitting me at that moment was just the perfect storm of being oh, wait a second.
Something is amiss here.
It's so bad, though, that I honestly, part of me feels like George Lucas was affected so much by the backlash to Phantom Menace that and granted, when he started the script, Phantom Menace had I think they're obviously still writing it after Phantom Menace was released, but it was shortly after. Certainly that it started it before, but they didn't finish it till afterwards.
Right.
So I'm not sure how much time he had to actually digest all the criticism from Phantom Menace and if any of that would have gone into Attack of the Clones. I like to think some of that did, because it almost feels like he dug his heels in and just doubled down. Oh, you didn't like the Phantom Menace?
We'll take this.
Well, let me show you a real bad movie. Yeah, you want to see that? Wait till Attack of the Clones comes out. I'm going to do more. It's everything that Phantom Menace was bad about, just on steroids.
For if it wasn't bad enough to have Jar Jar Binks, take Jar Jar Binks as a politician.
Yeah, I know. He's like, let's take two things people hate, Jar Jar Binks and politics. There you go. There you go, world. Is this the Jar Jar you wanted? It felt intentional. It felt so bad. It's crazy. So I know there's a lot to talk about here. So we'll go through. I know you have a list of pros and cons. I have a list of some as well. And we'll kind of talk through it. We can also talk a little bit through the narrative. It's a movie that it's like, I almost wanted to end the episode and just kind of call it good. people, don't see this movie if you haven't.
It's one of those narratives that you need to talk through.
Maybe. I do know this, though. I know we keep saying it's terrible without giving concrete examples. We will get to those. In fact, I'm tempted to put in audio drops of some of the dialogue just to remind people that we're not being over the top here. Because rewatching these, it actually is shocking. Mm-hmm. Because even though I knew Attack of the Clones is my least favorite, rewatching it, I killed them. Even I was surprised.
Yeah. I killed them all.
Oh, man. It is bad, man. But this is the thing, as a Star Wars fan, I remember I loved in A New Hope when, mm-hmm. when Luke, at the beginning of the movie, is talking to Ben Kenobi about his dad, and he gives him his lightsaber, you know?
Yeah.
And he talked about his father being a soldier in the Clone Wars, right? And it is the very first reference to the Clone War in Star Wars. You know? And I remember as a kid thinking, like, what? What is that? Like,
yeah, what are the
Clone
Wars?
So cool. Like, there was just some big noble battle, and his dad was, you know, some sort of soldier and whatever. But that reference to it, knowing that there was this thing in the past, right? It was this huge battle, mm-hmm. and it led to everything that eventually became the Empire, and then there was a rebellion. It was always really fascinating to me. So when they started doing the prequels, I did like the idea of having a movie about the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this is not a movie about the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. It begins, but it's like the lead up to the Clone Wars. But they also, in doing that, they show way too much. Because what was this war that I would imagine in my head was probably something really amazing and galactic and huge in scale, really ends up being in a football arena. It really ends up being at Madison Square Garden.
Termite mounds. and
it's literally clones versus battle droids, which are two non-human entities fighting. You know, there's no stakes here. I don't care. I mean, I guess there's stakes in terms of like the separatists having control and whatnot, but it's just so meaningless that now that moment is no longer special to me. And Ben Kenobi talks about the Clone Wars to Luke because now I know what it was, and it was dumb.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you point that out, because I had forgotten about that reference in A New Hope, and I was just thinking today about how I actually don't like the whole clone narrative at all. Just the idea that that was the precursor for the stormtroopers, and that they're sort of the driving force behind this whole rebellion and everything. Something about it just, as I pointed out, it just seemed really weak.
Really weak.
Really. And I don't know what, when George Lucas originally wrote that in, the reference to the Clone Wars, what he had in mind, if it was anything similar to it, or I'd be curious to know, because
there's no way he was thinking that. There's no way.
Like, seriously, it just sounded cool, like, maybe. No, the Clone Wars.
I think he probably had like the outline, like idea of what the Clone Wars may have entailed. But I highly doubt that he would have had this detailed, you know, like, well, there's this planet called Kamino, and we're going to have Jango, and they're going to be making all these, you know. Like, I don't think he had details at all. I think he had very, very high-level idea of what the Clone Wars could be. This mm-hmm. clone army, right?
Right.
I bet you it didn't go beyond that. Of course, this is conjecture. I don't know. But when it came time to flesh it out, like, right? Unfortunately, that time was long after George Lucas had creatively peaked. And so we get this arena battle. And, of course, we don't see what happens because the next film, you know, years go by.
Right.
Yeah. But it's doing that. It's showing me too much. Another example is Yoda, right? We see Yoda in Dagobah in Empire Strikes Back. We learn that this little weird frog-looking thing is the most powerful Jedi ever, right? And you think, like, what? How is he the most powerful Jedi ever?
Yeah, the juxtaposition is great.
What would he be like holding a lightsaber? Like, how did he operate, right? Like, those are questions I would ask myself. I think everyone asks themselves. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And by the end of the Attack of the Clones, we get to see what it's like with him in a lightsaber. And I wish I could unsee it.
Like, it's so bad.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. Even as a 9-year-old in the theater, I distinctly remember this. When that scene started, me and my friends were just laughing. It wasn't cool. We were just laughing, which is interesting because the laughter wasn't so much so that it, like, pulled me out of the illusion that I was under.
Yeah, you
I still liked it.
You landed safely back in your bubble of illusion.
I started to push the boundaries of the bubble a little bit.
Okay.
It ended up just working for whatever reason, but we laughed. You know,
it was ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it was so... The CGI didn't look great then, and it is certainly not held up.
No.
And it's like, those are the things that should be left up to the imagination. Like, I don't mind that Yoda has the capability of doing that. I think that's great. I don't want to see it. Because it you can't have a little green thing do that without it looking funny. It's going to be silly no matter what.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact it looked like terrible CGI.
Yeah. Well, and the same thing goes, I think, for the world in general. In the original trilogy, one thing that was really successful, I think, is they had real sets that they were grounded in, and you got a little glimpse of the world. You said, okay, this looks really cool. Whatever is going on here, I like it. And then we could imagine whatever else was out there. We could imagine these big sprawling landscapes and everything. Because there wasn't a lot of that. There was some of it, but not a lot of it. But then we go into the prequels, and there's always something going on. Out the window, you've got Coruscant and stuff buzzing everywhere. And it just, seeing it is inevitably not nearly as cool as just imagining. Yeah.
You're exactly right. What George Lucas really misfired on is people love the intimate personal stories in this universe.
Yeah.
And they can imagine the universe aspect of themselves, but they love the smallness of the story. A farm boy, the scoundrel, this princess, right? Very, very basic.
Yeah.
And he thought what we wanted, you know, essentially what the problem was we got CGI, technology advanced, and he wanted it. He wanted that technology so bad, he finally got it, and he wielded it. He wielded that technology
very irresponsibly.
Very irresponsibly. like a 9-year-old with a Darth Maul lightsaber. That's going to be bad. Things are going to really be bad. And so he decided to give us that, a very huge looking film that we didn't want. Spectacle here actually wasn't important to us. Mm-mm. We didn't care about the Senate. We don't care about the Trade Federation.
Not at all.
We don't care about whether or not the brokered is perfectly regal. Viceroy, whose name, by the way, the Viceroy's first and last name is Newt Gunray, by the way.
I remember that, yeah.
Newt Gunray.
I've forgotten.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
We're combining two animals and a weapon. Newts and stingrays and a gun.
It works.
It's a recipe for success. You can't go wrong with that.
I'd say maybe he was busy running out of good names, but no, they named another character Count Dooku.
Come on.
The naming convention in the prequels, not good.
No,
not good.
No, we can only hope that they... No.
I mean, I mentioned this again in the last spot, but Qui-Gon Jinn's, I mean, it's better than Dooku, better than Newt Gunray, but not good. Still not good.
Qui-Gon
Jinn's not good.
See, I don't mind Qui-Gon, unless maybe I need
Qui-Gon
to think about it more.
Sounds like a derogatory term I would refer to certain, I don't know, something. It sounds like an insult is what it does.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, when you put it like that, I'm starting to get inside your mindset.
He was out on, I mean, he gave up on naming Dooku, D-O-O-K-U.
Maybe he just listened to Green Day's album, really liked it, Dookie, and he just did a version of it.
I was hoping when Disney purchased, they announced the sale. I wanted Disney, Bob Iger, president of Disney, come forward, number one, be like, all right, so first things first, we're going to go back and change the name of Dooku to something that's more, respectable, because this guy's supposed to be a really scary bad guy.
Right.
And much like how Lucas went back in the special editions and changed things that we didn't want changed, we're going to go ahead and go back and actually change this guy's name.
For the better, though.
But really, honestly, I know it wouldn't happen, but I did want Disney to come out and say that they're not canon in the same way that the expanded universe novels aren't canon. Disney had to make that distinction. All these books people have been writing, not canon. Fun books, go ahead and read them. Not what we're going to be abiding to in our story, as we tell it, unfortunately, I don't think they had the guts, if you will, to do that for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, there's so much that seems frivolous in the prequels that even if it is canon, there's not a lot going on there. It's hard to discount what does have substance because it's the basic storyline. Anakin's fall to the dark side. Everything else, it just feels like fluff or I don't know.
Well, yeah. What's funny is we haven't even gotten to the worst part. I'm tired right now. I'm exhausted. I'm just like, man, this movie. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh no, wait, the worst part about it I haven't gotten to. And so I don't mean I knew I'd come out strong on this, and I feel very passionately that this movie was really really wrong on so many levels. This is definitely the one that's referenced to the most when we talk about the bad scripts of the prequels.
Yeah.
They were all pretty bad. This one was especially bad.
Yeah.
I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere. Not like here. Here everything is soft and smooth.
No.
I don't like sand. Oh, it's so sandy.
So, what you don't know, but people listening to this will know, is that I just played that audio clip before you said that. Because I'm playing the audio clip because people need to know. You guys need to hear this.
Yeah.
Okay? There's a line, there's a paragraph of text that Anakin says that is so terrible. I'm going to read it to you just like how it would read on a script because I want you to think inside, like if you're Hayden Christensen or anyone, and you're reading the script and you read this block of text, no matter how you approach this text, it's awful, right? So I don't envy his position because he had to interpret it. He had to act that out.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is it, and I quote, and I'm not going to act this out, I'm just going to read it. Okay.
Okay.
Quote, from the moment I met you all those years ago, not a day has gone by when I haven't thought about you. And now that I'm with you again, I'm in agony. The closer I get to you, the worse it gets. The thought of not being with you, I can't breathe. I'm haunted by the kiss that you should have never given me. My heart is beating, hoping that kiss will not become a scar. You are in my very soul, tormenting me. What can I do? I will do anything you ask.
And I just had a flashback to junior high reciting something in front of the class. So that's kind of the vibe I got there.
Is that how you read? Is that the tone or something?
I don't know. I don't know what it was. It wasn't pleasant,
like,
though.
The fact that there wasn't one person that, like, through all the eyeballs that had gone over the script, that there wasn't one person that came across that paragraph and was like, hey, George, so we're going to have to do something about this. What's interesting here, I want to believe someone would have been like, dude, this is not good. These are not good.
Yeah.
The script's not good. But I think there is truth to the prevailing theory that, and it's not even a theory, it's probably just truth, that George Lucas at this point was George Lucas. He owned the universe. He created Star Wars. He was a god, right? Like,
yeah, how can you tell him that?
How are you going to tell George Lucas how he should write his Star Wars script,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And so who's going to be that person? I don't know. The thing is I can understand if that was the case with The Phantom Menace. But at this point, we know now that his writing chops aren't there. If he had any writing ability, it's long gone. And he knows there was backlash to Phantom Menace. Like, there's got to be someone that, like, holds his hand, just someone that comes through and just, you know, a treatment of this script. Because those lines, I don't like sand, it's coarse and rough and irritating and it gets everywhere. Not like here everything is soft and smooth. No. come on.
Well, and it gets to the heart of the problem that this was George Lucas. You know, there was no collaborating. There was no bouncing ideas off each other in a group. It was all him.
Yeah.
You know,
his vision, his story, his script.
It was just everything.
And his grave.
Which, yeah. To be fair to him, that's bad for anybody. You know, that regardless of if you're George Lucas or not, if you're just going to take on something and entirely own it, it's, you know, I feel like,
well, I mean, we can
arise.
We can say this about Peter Jackson to a certain extent.
Yeah.
On a much lesser scale, I would argue, because some people would compare the Hobbit trilogy trilogy to the prequels, like, oh, it's, you know, he made the mistake of the Star Wars prequels. Mm-hmm. People would like, and I can understand why someone would go there in the comparison, like, once great director made this amazing trilogy, walks it back to do a prequel trilogy that's not nearly as good, and some would say really, really awful. The difference here is the Hobbit trilogy is 1,000 times better than the Star Wars prequels.
They're not awful
even with the last Hobbit film, which was not good.
Yeah.
The last Hobbit film was not a good movie. Definitely. Like, really bad. A lot of it it was bad. So they're not nearly egregious, but it commits the same sin of doing this prequel trilogy and having someone that's a creative genius, in some respects, given too much power,
mm-hmm.
especially in the editing room. Because in the case of The Hobbit, he got to make the call to make it 3 films instead of 2.
Yeah,
he was in the editing room for that. He's one of the editors, right? And what ends up happening is kind of this version of it that's like has moments. I certainly like the first Hobbit, right? But it's you look at Peter Jackson and go, Peter, like, there has to be someone that tells Peter Jackson that what he's doing here isn't good, but who's going to do that? So it's the same thing with George Lucas.
Agreed.
And I would say on a much even bigger scale, because, I mean, as big as Lord of the Rings was, Star Wars has
had... Infinitely bigger.
Infinitely bigger and way more time to, for people to digest and worship, really.
Yeah.
It's just a bummer.
Well, we got to get some pros in here. We got to get some...
Okay, pro number one. So I remember Anakin being like kind of whiny and Hayden Christensen being a really terrible actor. What I didn't remember is like he's legitimately creepy.
Yeah. Too. Oh, yeah.
Like he's very uncomfortably creepy. like there was this line, I was watching it. There's literally a line I'd forgotten about this where she's like, "Please don't look at me like that."
It makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah,
she's making us uncomfortable too, Padme.
She's like, "Please don't do it." He's like, "Why?" And she's like, "It makes me uncomfortable." And then he's like, "Sorry, my lady." Like, "My lady." And he's just this weird look on his face, like he has bad intention. You're like, "Stop it. Stop what you're doing."
Really odd.
Really, really creepy. Obviously, that was before, even before the sand comment, which is the pinnacle of creepiness. But yeah, it came out. So that's my first pro.
So I was waiting for it.
Okay. That's as positive as I get, man.
Okay. Well, how about this?
Okay.
Did you catch Joel Edgerton?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he's Uncle Owen, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's Joel Edgerton's, like, first real, like, I know, isn't that great? Did you not?
Yeah, I had no idea. Okay, so he was film.
Yeah.
That's signed by me.
I know he references that as a joke sometimes, like, not making fun of him, but he'll talk about, like, you know, the difficulties of, like, of playing Uncle Owen, you know, like, which is a great bit.
Didn't have any, like, any dialogue.
Like, yeah, no, none. And he's in the third one as well, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so because they drop off Luke there. And so he's in that as well. So he makes an appearance in both of them. I don't recall, I haven't rewatched Revenge of the Sith yet, so I don't recall if he has a speaking line. I feel like he does, but it'd be like one line, if anything.
Yeah,
but he may
really
not.
Brief.
So there you go, pro, Joel Edgerton. That's great.
One of the anthology films that they're going to make needs to be how Joel Edgerton managed to scramble his way up from Attack of the Clones to the career he has now. It could be Joel Edgerton's journey to
that's terrific
to stardom.
He just, you know, he had his, you know, I talked about a couple of episodes ago on the podcast, he had his directorial debut recently for a movie called The Gift, which is like 93-94% rotten. It's really great. And so, like, I mean, that's the title of his autobiography, From Attack of the Clones to The Gift. climbing Hollywood's ever-growing ladder. Or from the bottom to the top. Something, right?
Because
good for him. I'm glad. I'm grateful that he was not tarnished. I mean, he was in it so little, right? But I'm surprised Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman were able to rebound the way that they
did. Impressive they did.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, that leads to another pro. I think Ewan McGregor is a pro throughout... He's a highlight, I think, throughout the prequels.
So, yeah, much better. He's much better in Attack of the Clones than he is in Phantom Menace, though.
Because, you see, I didn't rewatch Phantom Menace, so I can't.
Because I remember, always considered Ewan McGregor as one of the few positives of the prequels.
Sure.
And a lot of that's colored by the fact that he's made a lot more movies since that I've liked, so I have this positive, you know, view of him. And when I watch Phantom Menace, it's not particularly good. Obviously, the script isn't helping him at all. He's not the worst offender, but it's not good.
Okay.
Then you get to the Attack of the Clones, and he's in a much better place. And then in Revenge of the Sith, same story.
Kind of settles into his own a little
bit. He knows what he's doing, and he's come out publicly and said, because there were some rumors like maybe Disney will do, you know, they're doing this anthology. Maybe they'll do not just an anthology, but maybe their own trilogy of what is it, 18 years or whatever from end of the Revenge of the Sith to A New Hope.
Okay, yeah.
However old Luke is at that.
Something like 18 to 20.
But like those 18 years, maybe one, maybe three films about what Obi-Wan Kenobi was doing. Like in whether it's, you know, how he ends up on Tatooine, what he's doing there. But essentially could be like he could go on missions or you know, be running around because he essentially is in hiding because they tried to kill all the Jedi, right? So the thing is you have a totally open world there to explore. Any stories you want to tell, and Ewan McGregor's like, sign me up.
Really?
Because, yeah, he's totally willing. Like, one, you know, dude's got to put food on the table. I mean, he's getting movie roles. He's not struggling there. But two, how badly do you think he wants to completely wash away the memory of his work? You know what I mean? That's got to be hard. You're excited to be in a Star Wars movie, and it's remembered as being a complete abomination, even if you were decent.
Yeah.
So I would watch those movies. I would actually really like it.
I'd be interested in that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be really interesting. What's funny about Ewan McGregor is in The Phantom Menace, I remember when they announced the casting for Obi-Wan Kenobi, because there's the big question of, like, who's going to play Ben Kenobi, right? Like, yeah. Sir Alec Guinness, you know, who's going to play that character? And when they announced Ewan McGregor, he was not a well-known actor. And the one thing that we knew about him, and I always remember this, and maybe you've heard this, I loved it. His uncle is Wedge Antilles from A New Hope.
Oh.
The X-Wing, Luke's friend.
Yeah. And was that the connection? Is that what got him on the... No, just coincidence?
Yeah. So he has these stories about growing up and his uncle being in Star Wars, and it was like so exciting to see his uncle in the Star Wars movie. He loves Star Wars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he went on to be Obi-Wan Kenobi, so...
That's
really fascinating.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah.
So his uncle's an X-Wing fighter pilot, that first Death Star. So, anyway, I thought that was interesting. I'm pretty sure it's Wedge Antilles. There's a small chance it could be Biggs that I'm referring to.
Okay.
I get them mixed up sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm not a Star Wars geek.
You know better than me.
Anyway, so I agree with you. A positive of this film would be Ewan McGregor's starting to get a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Hayden Christensen, obviously I mentioned that I thought he was horrible.
Yeah.
So I don't have to say it 10 more times, even though I might. It's really, really bad. It's a combination of bad script, really bad performance, and interpretation of a bad script. Some people argue that Hayden Christensen's like, he's actually a really good actor. He just had such a terrible script. It's not his
bad
fault.
Directing.
Like, no, this was his fault because it's both, right? He did not do. I mean, unless he was told to be as creepy as possible.
Yeah.
And then when he's not being creepy, be whiny. You know? But even then, he didn't do it that well. No.
What was your favorite sequence? Favorite's tough with something like this, but what do you think is the best sequence of Attack of the Clones? The Duel of Fates to Attack of the Clones.
There's no duel of fates. There's nothing like that. So probably the scene where Anakin and Padme are rolling down this grass hill.
Oh, gosh, with the giant dicks.
Yeah, exactly.
It just makes me cringe.
Basically everything on Naboo in this movie, I'm in on. That's the best sequence.
Yeah. You know what's great about it, though?
C-3PO and R2-D2 being the witnesses of Anakin and Padme's wedding. They're witnesses of their wedding. Or C-3PO and R2-D2. Like,
are you serious? They could program them not to spill the beans. So
yeah,
they're the ones they could trust.
They could.
Well, the thing about Anakin and Padme is it's... Their whole romance is so bad. And you mentioned this in the Phantom Menace pod, that the music is consistently really good.
Yeah.
The music's great in all of them.
John Williams, apparently he didn't get the memo to not bring Ray game. He brings these incredible scores, and he's like, you guys didn't also bring quality work to the table? Like,
it's super good.
Yeah.
And I think one of my favorite pieces of music in not just the prequels, but the entire Star Wars saga, call it, is Anakin Padme's theme.
I think it's
phenomenal.
It's hard to enjoy when you associate the music with the visual, right?
Right.
If you listen to the soundtrack, excuse me, like if you listen to your car or whatever over a certain period of time, you do learn to appreciate how great the soundtrack is, but also that song. It really is good.
Yeah.
But if you don't do that, it's hard for it to ever be viewed as good because all you can see are two human beings rolling down a grassy hill
with just
a lot of sand everywhere. It's all coarse.
Yep, so coarse.
It's just
gritty.
You know how many people auditioned to play Anakin? There were a lot of people's careers. A lot of bullets dodged. So I think Ryan Felipe is counting his lucky stars.
Okay.
He's had a rough go anyway, I guess. I mean, he's been up and down. But one actor actually liked quite a bit, a fellow Sacramento native that I love, Colin Hanks.
Colin Hanks?
He auditioned.
Really?
He auditioned for the role of Anakin. And you'd think then with Colin, I mean.
Yeah, he's got the brooding.
When
he's...
your dad is Tom Hanks, you know, you'd think you'd have some sort of edge. The problem, I'm sure, was he looks and sounds too much like Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
That would be almost like a little distracting. Thankfully, that hasn't stopped him from being able to find some really awesome roles in both TV and movies since. And I actually really like the stuff he's in.
He's pretty good.
No, yeah, I really think he's terrific.
I didn't know he's a Sacramento native.
Yeah, he's from Sacramento, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Tom Hanks is from Oakland, but it's from Tom Hanks' first marriage. And so when he got divorced, Colin's mom and Tom's ex-wife moved to Sacramento. So he grew up.
Okay.
He grew up in Sacramento.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So he actually he just finished making a documentary about Tower Records, which started in Sacramento. It's a Sacramento chain, like the small ma-pa record shop.
Yeah.
That ended up exploding and then going bankrupt in 2006. So he made, over the last like 5 or 7 years, he's been making this documentary about the rise and fall of Tower Records. And he just finished it. So he's been doing like a round of interviews. So he's on a ton of podcasts right now.
Yeah.
Because he's pumping the film. But great guy. So glad he wasn't Anakin.
Yeah. That would have been rough.
If he had been Anakin, I would not be watching his Tower. He would not be making his Tower Records documentary. It'd be a little bit. He'd just be Tom Hanks' son.
I feel like Tom Hanks would have, if that would have happened, he would have leapt in somehow. And
could you imagine? Could you imagine if he like Tom was like, I'll let Colin do this if we have like Final Cut, whatever. They make the movie and he comes through and he's removed. Tom Hanks demands to just remove his son from every scene. So he just put like a digital person in there, which probably would have done a better job of acting.
And everything else is digital anyway.
What if Hayden Christian is that digital replacement to Colin Hanks' character? What if he actually
did
it? You
might have stumbled upon something big here.
That's why we haven't seen Hayden Christensen in forever, because he's not real.
No, they had to do Jumper, a digital Jumper, just to... to solidify their cover story.
Yeah, exactly. But, to make us believe he's a human being, because human beings don't read lines on scripts like this.
Yeah, which makes sense, because it was never believable that a human could actually teleport like that. It had to have been.
Plus, humans love sand. wow. Yeah, I like this. I think we're onto something there. You can keep going through. Like, I did a quick Google search. There's a bunch of other names that aren't coming to mind, but I remember seeing like Ryan Phillippe, Colin Hanks, tons of other guys around that same age range that had auditioned. It's fascinating to me that they didn't go with any of those people. Not that any of them had like established careers yet, but like Hayden Christensen's wasn't good then, hasn't been good since, and hasn't been in a good movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
It blows my mind when the swing and the miss was so unfortunate with Jake Lloyd that they would literally repeat that same mistake.
Yeah.
With the older, it's so crazy. Like, you'd think there'd be table reads or something where they're like, guys, he's not reading this with any, believable. He's like really over the top, whiny, expressive.
Yeah.
It makes me wish, honestly, I'm watching the performance, I'm like, I kind of don't want Vader to turn good at the end of Return of the Jedi.
No.
Like, I don't want Luke to
like
stay bad.
At all.
I don't want you to be good.
And it's really unfortunate, because just the raw character of Anakin is, it's sort of it could have been a canvas for some really good stuff, with good writing, good directing, good acting. It's an interesting character, and we wanted to like him.
Yeah.
We wanted to be with him through this journey, but.
Yeah. You know, I think the most amount of rage I think I felt with the whole Hayden Christensen thing was when George Lucas released the new set of DVDs and Blu-rays for the Star Wars trilogy, and I was watching Return of the Jedi.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I wasn't... Yeah. No one warned me. I had no idea.
That's,
I was not prepared.
So
I was not prepared. This was my safe place. I put the prequels away. I just threw them away. And I put in Return of the Jedi. I'm like, at least here, I'm safe.
Right?
Nope.
Hayden
Christensen found his way in Return of the Jedi. They took out that guy, the poor actor. I believe his name is Sebastian something. I don't recall, but
who plays the younger?
He plays Anakin. Yeah, he plays the ghost Anakin next to Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda. A great moment in the film. I loved that as a kid. I still love it. I think it totally works now. It could have been really cheesy and poorly done. It's awesome. It totally works.
Yeah.
And could you imagine my horror? Could you? But I'm like, here it is, the ghost shot, And it turns, I'm like, what is he doing? Get him out.
Somebody fix this. Somebody fix this.
So that's my outrage. Imagine the outrage of the guy that got superimposed out for Hayden Christensen.
Oh, yeah, his legacy. I was in Return of the... He goes to show his kids. Hey, kids, I was in Return of the Jedi, and it comes on, they're like... No, it doesn't.
Could you imagine the DVD meeting at ILM or wherever it was, at Lucasfilm, Industrial Light and Magic, the guys who do the special effects, They sit down, they're like, all right, we're just prepping the new DVDs, we're about to ship these out, anything else before we print these? And George's like, yeah, wait. I want to add in a ghost Hayden Christensen at the end of Return of the Jedi. Could you imagine the reaction of all the people in the room looking at each other like, who's going to be the one to tell him? We aren't like, that's the worst idea. Yeah. Like, he had to tell someone that he wanted to do that. Someone had to do that. And the pain that that poor animator had to do in placing the ghost. I wish Hayden Christensen would have had the guts to just say no.
Yeah, I would have respected him.
Because he had to have actually acted that. Yeah,
he like, might have not
look,
been
George,
consulted.
It didn't work,
defense.
Man. Look, we tried. It didn't work. I'm not going to let you go back and ruin something someone loves. But that honestly, though, if that's it's beyond egregious. Because at the very least, just separate. Allow people to separate them. Because some people really do view the prequels as not existing.
They're
never part of it, right? But now they have to see Hayden Christensen.
And you can't stream them anywhere, as I found out. You can't rent it.
The Star Wars movies?
The prequels anywhere.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Thank goodness I didn't have to pay $45 to buy it to see it. My roommate ended up having it. That would have been I wasn't willing to invest anything in viewing it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I spent $45, watched Return of the Jedi, and threw my DVD case across the room when I saw the ghost. I'm still mad. I'm still really upset about it.
I could tell.
Ugh, man. George, thank you for what you did in the 1970s and early 80s with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Also, thanks for what you did with the Indiana Jones, American Graffiti. Really, you had a great run. But you've now officially done more bad than good. So, that's where I'm at with him. I'm glad he's nowhere near it. I'm so glad that actually it's in the safe hands of Disney and Kathleen Kennedy at Lucasfilm, and especially the directors, J.J. Abrams, Rian Johnson, and then Colin Trevorrow. All three who I think will do a really good job.
Colin Trevorrow's on. I didn't know that.
They announced him, for episode 9. He's the director of episode 9.
That should be good.
They announced a month or so, or a few weeks ago, I think.
Okay.
But speaking of new Star Wars stuff, maybe we just mentioned the news that dropped today that Monday the new trailer's coming out. Pumped to see that.
Oh, yeah.
The bad taste in my mouth I have right now from talking about Attack of the Clones will be washed
shake
away.
Shake it off. Do we know what... Is it going to premiere with... along with the film in theaters, is it going to be linked with one, or
it's supposed to play on TV? This is what the post said, and it's confusing to me too. So maybe it's a 30-second version of it, or they do it like kind of Super Bowl every now and then. You get like a 2-minute rat or something.
Yeah,
and it's they're Disney; they can spend it how much money they want. So I think I don't know if it was for a football game or some. I mean, it's like NFL Monday Night Football, something like that. Some big. A lot of eyeballs. So it's from what I understand. Now, of course, that's still rumored. Disney hasn't confirmed anything, but like multiple outlets are reporting that their sources are saying like Monday's the day it drops.
Yeah.
If it's going on in TV, it'll air on TV and then immediately be released online afterwards, or maybe it'll be released before. Oftentimes these things can leak, and so they just release it anyway, you know?
Right,
Disney's pretty good about not allowing that to happen, but we'll see. I'm excited.
I'm excited too.
It'll be good.
I'm excited too. I have to be honest, watching Attack of the Clones, It unfortunately did diminish my excitement a little bit for The Force Awakens.
So that's an interesting point. Interesting that you bring that up. It did for me as well a little bit. Now, if you haven't noticed already, and I'm not to make an insensitive analogy, but I'm gonna go ahead and go with it. I'm gonna go plow through and do it anyway. So here's my half-hearted apology. But like J.J. Abrams and Disney and all the marketing. They're treating us, the fans, like abuse victims. No, they really are. They really are.
Yeah.
So the look on your face, you wish I hadn't said that.
But I see what you're saying.
They're being very careful, and they keep releasing these vignettes and being like, hey, look, like practical effects. Mm-hmm. We built this ship. We built the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
We built the Jakku. You know, like they're treating like people who honestly have like, and I'm being very serious, emotional scarring in the sense of like, you know, they want us to believe again and to believe in the magic of the original trilogy, and that like they're actually doing it right, that they're not repeating, you know, past sins. That's not happening. But that message has been very consistent and constant.
Yeah.
Like every public appearance, every single piece of media they release, they talk about that. And so you can tell it's so important to them that people know this is not the prequels. But you're right. The point you're making here is, watching, I had this feeling both Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, is that I realized how excited I was pre-Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
More excited than I am now for Force Awakens, but not like a ton more. I'm still, I'm like pumped for Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And for Phantom Menace, of course, I was out of my mind excited, especially at that age. But like watching them, you realize like, we could be setting ourselves up for a letdown. Not a bad movie, but maybe something that's not quite as great as we think it will be. Because when you watch those movies, you're like, oh, this is like this. I know it's not likely it'll be as bad as this, but this is possible. Like, it's possible for someone to make a Star Wars movie this bad because it happened. And what if that happens again?
My one worry with it, and I'm still hopeful because I trust J.J. Abrams when he's at his best. I just rewatched the pilot of Lost yesterday.
Oh yeah,
and it's fantastic. It's so good.
Oh,
so J.J. peak J.J. is awesome. He's one of my favorites.
Yep.
My worry with it is with this huge emphasis on the practical effects and the real sets and everything, trying to go back to the original trilogy, that it'll feel something like a Disneyland ride. That it'll be great and it'll capture the aesthetic and the feel, but it'll be kind of like, I don't know, like a Star Tours. We're like, oh, look, there's Han and Chewie. And like, oh, look, there, oh, BB-8, that's new, but it's kind of like R2, but it's an interpretation. It's cool.
Yeah.
My worry is that it'll feel that way. And it brings up the question for me, I guess, is the original trilogy an anomaly that just exists in space and time and is a product of the time period, the budget constraints that they had, that it had sort of a loose style to it. Everything was improvised almost a little bit. And I wonder if what it is something that is just... almost a snapshot of its era that can never be
like recreated. Lightning in a bottle. I mean, are you talking like is that a figure of speech?
I actually haven't heard that figure of speech before.
I think it is.
That sounds accurate.
I mean, if you were to catch lightning in a bottle, that sounds like something difficult to do and be very rare.
it sounds like exactly. I'm totally very Star Wars as well.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, no, I'm good. Lightning in a bottle. It's yeah, people say that. yeah, trying to catch lightning in a bottle.
Okay,
it's a moment. You can catch it in a bottle, but you can't recreate it.
Yeah.
Gosh, why did I second guess myself on that figure speech? Gosh darn.
No, yeah.
I know what I'm saying.
That's a great one. That's a great figure
No, you're
speech.
Right. That's totally... It's a good question. It could have been lightning in a bottle. The fact, though, that George Lucas had some... You know, that he was a part of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Leads me to believe he's capable of doing more than that. Great. The flip side of that is that was also around the same time, like same around the same era, and that could have been a moment. I have a theory I always talk about, how directors have a prime and a peak, like an athlete. Mm-hmm. They have their peak, and then there's no going back. There's certain directors like Spielberg and others who defy that theory. But for the most part, Francis Ford Coppola, who's made some of the greatest films ever, cannot make a good film to make his life, and it makes no sense. And so do I think George Lucas peaked creatively back then, the 70s and early 80s? Yes, I absolutely do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. We're never going to get anything that feels like the original trilogy. The Force Awakens won't be better than A New Hope. And as long as we know that going in, I think we won't be disappointed.
And that's my hope that it's...
I think we're going to get a good movie. I think we're going to have a very fun movie and I'll get us excited for the rest of the trilogy, and it's going to be awesome. But if we're expecting anything on the level of the original trilogy, we will be disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, I just hope for an interpretation, something that tries to capture the feeling, but then just go somewhere new with it. Try something else, or I don't know. But there is still hope.
There's hope. It's a new hope.
It's a new hope.
You
for
were
us.
Trying to say it. I was thinking about saying
I
it.
I couldn't decide.
Looking at each other in our eyes, like, do we do this? Do we say? Do we drop the new hope?
I just went right
look,
in.
Look, it's a new hope.
Or our only hope.
Yeah. What I need to awaken here is the Force, because it's been dormant and mm-hmm. since Revenge of the Sith. So if that can awaken, I'm going to be happy.
Can I just tell you real quick about something I want to write to one of these directors, something okay. I hope they do. I've pictured this in my mind okay. for probably a year and a half now. So you have a lightsaber duel going on, right? Jedi, Sith. They're just going at it. But the Sith's starting to get the upper hand. So you're starting, you know, the Jedi's kind of being driven back or whatever. Ultimately, Sith takes a swing, knocks Jedi's lightsaber away, okay. and is going in for the kill stroke, right?
Okay.
Jedi throws his hand up and force blocks the kill stroke.
Okay.
Force blocks the lightsaber, which we've never seen before. We've seen the little,
nothing quite that over.
But force blocks it. What I love to picture is, what sound would it make? It wouldn't make a sound, but we'd want a sound. It would need to be cool, implosion, like a whoop, something like that. I don't know. But he blocks it, and there's like a sequence where the music cuts out, and then blocking a few, blocks one, force grabs the lightsaber, duel resumes. I think it'd be great.
So, did you just pitch to me a lightsaber fight sequence that you've teamed up?
Yeah, I did.
We got to get you in touch with the right people.
Shout out to Colin Trevorrow. Who's the other?
Ryan Johnson.
Ryan Johnson.
It's R-I-A-N and everything.
Listeners, tweet at him. Let's
tweet at him. Hashtag more force block. So if you guys want to start using that hashtag, that'd be really terrific. Imagine, if that's trending, more force block, please.
Imagine the toy possibilities. Magnetic gloves the children could be wearing, force blocking, all sorts of things.
Or you could sell them something that's literally invisible and be like, trust me, this is a force block. Doesn't sound like anything. You can't see anything. It's a force block. I think we can say we've all dreamed up of our own lightsaber battle sequences. I know this is a point I made in the last pod too, but along those same lines, Skylar disagreed with me, but I actually maintain that I do think it's a pro throughout the films, with the exception of a few instances. But having these lightsaber battles and duels is actually really great to see. We don't get lightsaber battles of this magnitude in the prequels, in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
So actually seeing people go at it full speed, full swing, like really going at these back and forth battles and these acrobatics and like jumping all around and
some of the best moments.
Yeah. So I think I'm glad that they were able to do that. I wish they just like Yoda is sacred. I wish they wouldn't have done it with him.
Yeah.
So,
I agree.
But anyway, wrapping up, was there any other points you wanted to make, or was that kind of your? Was that your closing? Do you have a closing statement? Is what I'm asking.
I don't beyond what we've covered, and I think that you could go through and name moments throughout that I think were positive, a few scattered things throughout there, and you could see maybe that there was a great idea and there was something really big planned, but it just the execution fell a little bit flat, unfortunately.
It's unprecedented institutional failure of execution is what it is. Those words in that order might not make sense. This isn't George Lucas
thoughts.
Is to blame, yes, but so is everyone else and everyone that didn't say anything, right? Like, you're complicit. You were complicit if you didn't warn George. Now, for those of you that tried and failed, you're fighting the good fight.
You know, it was a childhood love that I've had to let go.
Yeah, yeah. But, you had to realize later on, it's not a good movie. But I'm glad you're at least able to enjoy it at an age, you know, where it's okay. It's totally understandable to enjoy it then. That's awesome. But anyway, that's it. We have a way of ending these podcasts. Everyone participates. You know, you're nodding your head.
I know it.
There's this film, it's a movie that came out back in 94. It's called Jurassic Park. I don't know if you have seen it.
It's 93.
Not only have you seen it.
I don't want to correct you on your own podcast.
I stand corrected and humbled. We must be talking about different movies.
One of my favorites of all time.
Where Mace Windu says the famous line. So we are going to go out on the night.
Hold on to your butts.
There you go.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.